This is the afternoon session in Function 9 NCSG meeting, beginning at 1:30, ending at 3:30.
So let's, can we get the meeting started? I apologize for being a little bit late. We had folks in here in the room when we were supposed to start, so we had to wait for everything to get reset up again. Do we have people on the phone? Can I get started? Am I okay? Yeah? Okay. All right, everybody. Welcome. My name is Robin Gross, and I'm the chair of the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group, and this is the open membership meeting of the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. And let me just very briefly run through our agenda. The first order of business this morning is we've got, thank you so much, we've got Stephanie Perrin here to speak with us, and she is a member of the Who Is Expert Working Group, although they don't call it Who Is, it's called the GTLD Directory Services Group. And so this is our opportunity to talk to her about what is happening on this in this group and what are the objectives and how can we help. So we'll do that for about half an hour. And then we will have another guest, a visit from Sally Kostertan, who's ICANN's staff member responsible for outreach and stakeholder engagement. And so we will talk with her for about half an hour on ICANN's outreach and engagement plans and how we can be involved in that. And then we can have a more substantive sort of policy issue, a discussion on a growing trend at ICANN to replace the bottom-up community-led policy development process with top-down staff unilateralism, and how do we want to address this. It is something that we've seen in a lot of the other meetings this week, but I think we should have a plan for how we want to address this. And then at 1500 to 1530, we will have a visit from certain members of ICANN's accountability and transparency review team, and it's our chance to talk to them about what they're doing and how we can feed into the process that they're working on as well. And then we have to break at, let's say, 1525, because we meet with the board at 1530 in another part of the building, so it's going to take us a few minutes to get over there. Yes, Joy?
Sorry, just a question on that. Can we have some preparation time for that meeting?
Can we what?
Can we have some preparation time for the meeting with the board?
The agenda? We can. Actually, I think we can. And so I think maybe yes. Yes, please, is the answer. And the slot where we've got on our discussion on the policy issue on community-led, we can talk about it then, because that's one of the topics that we'll be talking about with the board, and then we can also add those other topics in there as well.
Good.
Okay,
thanks.
Great. So that's our agenda for today, and thank you all for coming, and I apologize. We usually like to go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves, but we just don't have time today. So we will send around a attendance sheet so folks can write down their names and who they represent. So without further ado, I want to introduce once again our speaker, Stephanie Perrin. She is a privacy expert from Canada, and the only privacy expert who's on this working group that's supposed to solve ICANN's privacy problems. So unfortunately, the working group is largely business and intellectual property attorneys and law enforcement, and so it is very difficult to get pro-privacy positions put forward in there. But let me just actually sort of turn it over to Stephanie, and I would like for us to be able to ask questions and have a direct interaction. So I'll just take a cue also of people who have questions and such. But first, let me just turn it over to Stephanie, and if you could just maybe tell us a little bit more, because I was very, very vague on this working group and how it fits into the ICANN picture in terms of the expected outcomes of the group. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Robin. Okay, firstly, I am a newbie to ICANN. I went to one meeting in Montreal. I did, when I was working in the private sector as a consultant, do the draft, at least one of the first draft, privacy policies for CIRA up in Canada, but I have spent most of my career working on privacy issues in the federal government. as an access to information and privacy coordinator in government, as the drafter of the private sector law that passed, not the legal drafter, but the policy director, as someone working in research and policy in the Office of the Privacy Commissioner. I am not, however, here in my government capacity. Kathy Kleiman reached me at my normal government job and persuaded me to use my holidays and vacation time in a profitable way, volunteering for this committee, because obviously I would have to recuse myself from my government functions. I'm on the verge of retirement, so I thought, what the heck? What's a few weeks' vacation spent at ICANN? So that is the basis on which I'm here. And I must say those few weeks of vacation are disappearing rapidly because this is not, as advertised, a 20-hour-a-month job. And I notice Kathy's not here to feel the brunt of my ire on that score. So I arrived at this very lately. I do not really fully understand the antecedents to the creation of our group, but I gather that the WHOIS directory has been an issue that has been going back and forth for, by anyone's count, 14 years, and that they decided to strike an expert group, and you will see the announcement was made on February 14th on the news ICANN main site. You'll see all of the members and the announcement of what our purpose is. And it is a very interesting and smart group of people, I hasten to assure you. Everyone, of course, representing a different area of expertise, but it has been emphasized repeatedly that we do not represent stakeholder groups. So the effort was to find people who were expert in certain areas, and my claim to fame obviously would be data protection and privacy. I will tell you a little bit about my personal approach to this. I'm not sure that I can speak for all members of the group. My personal approach would be that it would seem a de novo approach is required to this. In other words, you have to kind of clear your mind of what exists and get to what the real purpose is. I keep emphasizing to my colleagues that the beauty of data protection law and principles is that purpose is key. So why on earth do we have a WHOIS in the first place? Let's forget the history of how it evolved, but what's it there for? And in this respect, the technical folks who are on that group understand that really well because, of course, they're used to the concept of give us the business requirements and we'll build it. And so I think that works really well as a way that this group is functioning. And although I am the only data protection person there, although Michael Niebel is on our group and he has a long history in the EU and was certainly around for the beginning of the directive, so he's pretty well aware of what might be involved in terms of the data protection. But I think that starting from scratch is an important principle. Trying to build for the future is an important principle. And trying to understand all the stakeholder requirements is an important principle. And unfortunately, there is pressure, you know, that what we are hearing is we needed this yesterday. And of course, there's already been a 2-year exercise gathering up the requirements for this. So it is felt that we don't need yet another committee to study the matter for 2 years. We need an expert group to recommend a model. For those of us that haven't been around for the past 10 years looking at this, it's a little bit breathtaking the speed with which we're trying to move. So my goal in coming today to speak to you, at least one of my personal goals, is to gather up information that I can bring back to that committee. So your business requirements, your policy issues. In my view, there seems to be a failure at ICANN in some quarters to understand how easily policy gets built by implementation. In other words, if I can have a nerdy moment, I am trying to quit government and get to my doctorate, and that's basically what I'm looking at, social construction of technology. So I find this fascinating, that the discussion that you folks had the other day with the GNSO, that fascinating. So I would like to gather up all of the policy issues that you folks consider important and then try to figure out how that translates into business requirements for the construction of the new WHOIS directory. So does that give you a start, and could we open the floor to comments and questions, which I will dutifully note down here?
I believe we've got Wendy first. Is there anyone else who wants to get in the queue before I give the floor to Wendy? Any hands? Okay, go ahead, Wendy.
Thanks very much, Stephanie, and it's wonderful to see you participating actively on the panel. One other bit of history to add to the mix. When the non-contracted parties met in Los Angeles for our intersessional, Steve Crocker talked with us and said that the board viewed this expert panel and the reclassification from WHOIS toward directory services as a chance to bring into scope the issues of privacy and purpose that had too often been ruled out of scope when we were talking about WHOIS. We got stalemated frequently when trying to add those privacy issues into the WHOIS discussion, and so wiping the slate clean, Steve told us, was the board's way of saying we need to consider those issues. Encouraged by that, and I wanted to offer that we should find ways for privacy researchers and advocates to give input to the panel, and even with though you're the only one participating there directly. So if you can help to give us heads up when there's an issue under consideration or expert input or factual input that could be helpful, please keep an open communication channel. My particular interests are in free expression and particularly anonymous communication. I think that of domain names, as I'll say again and again, domain names are important to free expression because they can provide sort of a stable pointer to online speech. And so we should demand of them all of the protections that we demand for the speech itself, and that means stability, opportunities for privacy, opportunities for anonymity, freedom from undue pressure, so I think we really should be demanding a system that is capable of all of those privacy protections.
Thanks. And if I can just comment on that, I am trying to develop use cases that would demonstrate the need to have anonymous registration. And as you know better than I, the concept of anonymous registration is anathema to many parties. And when I even when this concept that it wouldn't be out there in the publicly available WHOIS, let's just keep calling it the WHOIS for the sake of brevity rather than the new undecipherable acronym. I want to call it WHO2, and we have enough copyright lawyers there to take on Bono when he comes knocking, but nobody's going for that, so what the heck. Those use case scenarios that demonstrate why you need more than just a proxy server, Because a person who is under a death threat, whether it's because they're a secret agent, a human rights worker in a hostile environment, a unelected victim of the latest election that has fled the country and is now doing political propagandizing, a journalist dropped down in enemy territory. I mean, all of those use cases, any you can give me, would be much appreciated, because those are the kinds of arguments I need to sort of place that stake in the ground. And I have been consulting my techie colleagues at the table, who are delightful, I must say, and I have a number of questions about the construction of weirds at IETF, and I've been assured that that will be a complex enough system that it will be able to encompass such a thing as pseudonymous credentials to validate a truly anonymous registration. And so technically, I have great confidence that there's a way of building it. I do understand that, of course, you've still got to deal with traffic data and all of these sorts of things if you're protecting identity, but that's a whole other problem. And it's another thing I would encourage you to... one of the exercises I'm going through kind of privately is sorting the pile of policy issues. Okay, which ones don't belong within the remit of ICANN, either by my estimation or their own? And in that case, then whose job is it? So a question that I have, having worked sort of peripherally in this area and had the pleasure of going to the G8 conferences when I was, cybercrime conferences, when I was in the private sector, what's the due process regime for criminal law enforcement? Why the lack of clarity at this point in time over what's a cybercrime and what's a what I would call a meat-based crime that has been facilitated by the use of the internet? You know, these were arguments we were having back at the end of the 90s. It's not by using a telephone in the middle of doing a bank robbery that it becomes a telecommunications crime, right? So that lack of clarity doesn't seem to have trickled down over the years, at least.
No, if ICANN were in charge of telephone design, they would try to find a way to make sure that the phone was designed in a way that you could not use it in a bank robbery.
Do we have any other questions here? Yes, Milton.
So probably these are ignorant questions in the sense that I should probably just read the charter of your directory services group. But I'm just curious as to what the heck do they mean by wiping a slate clean? What do they mean by... there was this review team that you're building on, right? So the review team was supposed to have done certain things and made certain recommendations, and then we have the GNSO to develop policy. So what exactly is this committee supposed to do? I just don't think I have a handle on it. Is it supposed to be the equivalent of the STI, that sort of an extra ultra-virus policy-making process where we settle all the disputes in a special committee that then gives you a full-flown proposal? Is it like the straw man proposal? What is it exactly?
Excellent questions, Milton, and ones that I, of all the members, am probably the least able to answer because I have asked the same questions myself. Okay, you had a two-year process, produced a good report with a number of recommendations. When I say that we are encouraged to wipe the slate clean, that's you know, language from the facilitator. It's not in our enabling charter, if we have one. Our goal is to look at the report that was done and make recommendations, which will be then taken to a PDP to build this thing, apparently. why an expert group had to be struck, I think that's an excellent question for council, and I hear that they're hearing from constituencies later today, so that's what you call a punt.
I think the Who Is review team was confined by its charter to looking at the existing Who Is and all of the restrictions around it as the solution to the problem. So while there may have been good things in that report, I don't think it was overall a good report on where we should go in the future. And it was confined by sort of accuracy and must display all this stuff, so it never got to consider privacy at all.
Thanks. That really helps me. I wish I'd talked to you two months ago. No. It is difficult because you don't really know where to start in this, and being, of course, the newbie, I'm asking all the annoying questions. Like, for instance, there was a discussion at one of the sessions I was at the other day about... Oh, I guess it was our session. I remember being there. Yes. I think it was one of the board members, whose name I'm going to forget at the moment, who said, you know, is it a land registry? Or is it a motor vehicle license, a domain name? Well, that's kind of a fundamental question if you're constructing a registry and you're trying to figure out which elements belong in the registry. Is it a land registry or a motor vehicle registry? And is it a right or is it a privilege? My own position is if we are constructing for the future, and everyone is doing everything on the internet, including governments, then you can hardly say that it's a privilege, and you can hardly make the argument that you don't really need a domain name to function on the internet. You can go and blog on Blogspot or something, or you can get a Facebook page, or you can, you know, any. Why should an individual be forced into a private sector solution? You should be able to get a domain name and run your own show. In my view, that's only my view.
Well, I'm enjoying this conversation across the table. Wendy Seltzer again. An example that comes to my mind is the whole saga around WikiLeaks and the pressure that they were put under, and the pressure that all of their providers of services were put under when U.S. diplomatic cables leaked and Senator Lieberman came out arguing that not only should their hosting providers be held in contempt, but their domain name registry and registrars and their payment providers. And the more different people you have to depend on for provision of services and the more different people who claim that they're offering merely licenses rather than transfer of ownership, I think the more tenuous our speech rights are. So I'm 100% behind you that we shouldn't be putting ourselves in reliance on lots of third parties to uphold these rights.
Microphone, Wolfgang.
You asked where to start. I think there are around 10,000 pages in the archive since the last 10 years of Who Is discussion in ICANN. So I have sometimes the feeling we are wheeling, you know, circling around this without any real progress. And I think time is more than ripe with new registries are coming that somebody, you know, goes and accesses this and says, you know, this is a new start. So and here we have very clear things. You know, we had this debate that even the governments are very split. It's good to hear that Michael Niebel is there, but the U.S., you know, sees the Article 29 working group not really as important body. Susan has watered it down as just an advisory body, but what Article 29 Working Group is saying is rather relevant. And so we have here a conflict between governments if it comes to this issue. And this makes your life not even more complicated.
I should say that I have been a painful participant, and no doubt in the eyes of many on this, because I have encountered a lack of awareness that, for instance, the Article 29 group is not just an advisory body, it's an advisory body that is mandated by European directive. I mean, it is constituted under Article 29, hello? And the Article 31 group, the response to that is the government group, also similarly constituted under the directive. Now, what happens in the future, of course, I'm not up to date on that, and if anyone is, I'd welcome a little quick update, because I haven't had time. I think that's... I also dragged people through a discussion of the refusal to deal clause, which cost me a year and several quarts of blood when we were drafting the Canadian legislation, which basically that refusal to deal clause says you cannot refuse an individual a service if they refuse to give more information than is strictly necessary for the provision of that service and that is defined in the purpose. So I think that's rather critical to the who is discussion. What's critically required for the provision of the service of giving a domain name? And then there are, of course, layers. Obviously, the registrar has to get paid. But that's not the same as what the registrar is obliged to put into the who is, right? And I'm still continually mixing up registrars and registries and the way the domains are segregated here and who does what, so please excuse me if I use the wrong R or E here. But it basically falls into what goes out there in the public record, and in my mind it's three things. It is the, and of course I'm giving you my personal views as a data protection air quotes for those on the line expert here, because our committee has not made public pronouncements all of this. I can really only talk freely about what I'm saying, and if you have other views, please, you know, feel free to yell at me and contradict me, because I'm not necessarily correct. I'm just telling you what my position that I'm advancing is. Anyway.
Okay, thank you. And in the queue, I've got Avery and then KK. Then Constantinos. And then the other KK, Kathy Kleinman.
Thank you. Avery Doria speaking. I'm really glad that this is happening, because as early as 2007, people were already writing that, I don't think we were using directory services, but the fact that the tools were not complicated enough or complex enough to accommodate the notion of policies that we needed. I wanted to go back to one thing, though, and it's a discussion I constantly find myself in, and you seem to be comfortable with it, which is that notion that because e-government and all these things may make internet access a human right, a right, having the notion of being able to register for a domain name, not having that same. And because I sort of live both in the at-large, where the philosophy is users have rights of access, but there's no right to registration, and here, where there kind of is a presumption of a right to registration, but I always feel that we're hand-waving when we argue that there is a right to registration, and I always feel like I'm sort of arguing from quicksand when I do it, that I don't have a firm footing. So it sounded like you felt there was a firm footing in that right to registration, and I'd be happy if you told me how to have that.
I'm only giving you my view, and what I'm expressing. And in my view, since it's hard to predict what shape e-commerce will take in the next 20 years, how necessary it is. If you were looking at the full suite of democratic rights that we hold dear, surely this comes into, and you know, unfortunately I should have memorized the UN Charter by now, but I haven't. So isn't this the right to own property, you know? It seems it fits in that. And this, of course, would be considered to be well outside the domain of what we're supposed to be doing in this committee. But I think it's a very interesting discussion from a policy perspective to have, because nobody's really defining this for ICANN, I guess. ICANN picks its own way about what's within its jurisdiction. But at least you have to allow, if you're building something, in my view, you cannot construct something that implicitly, by its very construction, makes a decision as to whether something is a right or whether it isn't. You have to be neutral, unless you're prepared to embrace the policy. So I'm just being nerdy there for a minute. But does that answer your question?
Thank you. I will be happy to quote Article 17 from now on. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so Konstantinos.
Thank you, Robin. Hi, Stephanie. And I am very, very pleased to see that there's work done on this area and for you being part of this. Very briefly, I was wondering whether the team is taking into consideration the work that is being, or the views of other organizations. So I know for a fact that the Council of Europe has a privacy committee which is looking, amongst other things, into WHOIS issues.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I mean, they're also following what's happening at ICANN, and they're also looking into more general privacy aspects, but there's also the WHOIS angle, and I know that because I was at a different committee and we were updated by them. So I was wondering whether you are speaking to them, or any other body for that matter who is looking into
No, and I would love a contact so that I could reach out to them, because there has been a certain amount of reaching out to the data protection commissioners and to the Berlin group.
Okay.
Robin certainly gave that a try. I think it's late in the game to add another person on the committee, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that we don't want to hear the latest input and to prepare
Precisely,
them to respond when this thing comes out.
Yes, I mean, exactly.
Just to at
least to be some sort of solicitation of views and exchange of views. Okay, I'll let you know. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, next in the queue is Kathy Kleiman. Can someone give her a microphone? And then we're going to have to cut it off after Kathy and Stephanie respond, because our next guest is here. So go ahead, Kathy.
First, I apologize for being late. And second, I just wanted to thank Stephanie for stepping into an amazingly complicated, difficult, and massively time-consuming expert working group. And she brings an immense background. I know you introduced her, Robin, I'm sure of it. But just, if people here don't know, in the last few months, she's been to Los Angeles, London, now Beijing. It's a huge amount of work, and I can't imagine the working group without the balance of Stephanie's expertise and understanding and thoughts on definitions and structures. This has been missing, not missing, but incomplete from the debate for so long. I'm so glad to finally see the WHOIS discussion now grounded in law. And experts and people who wrote the law. Stephanie was the keynote of our WHOIS conference in Vancouver in 2005. So thank you. I'd love to see a round of applause, because she is just...
You make me feel very bad, because before you got here, I was blaming you for telling me this was 20 hours a month of work. So I'm humbled.
All right. I want to second everything that Kathy just said, and thank you. Thank you so much. And let us know if at any time if there's anything we can do to help you in the work that you're doing, because we really want to support you and contribute to this process. And we will come up with the needs, the use case scenarios for why we need anonymous domains and such and get that back to you. So I thank you again.
Perfect. And by all means, obviously, as I've complained earlier, Kathy has my number, but so does Robin. And if any of you think of anything, feel free to email me and give me your contacts there. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on in the agenda. The next speaker is Sally Costerton. She's ICANN's staff member responsible for outreach and stakeholder engagement. And so we thought this would be a good opportunity to talk with her about ICANN's outreach and stakeholder engagement plans and how can we contribute to that. So let me just sort of turn it over to you if you just want to get us started here, and then we can take a cue and such if you just want to give us.
I do have a hard stop at 2:45. Just wanted to mention that. Because
okay.
I have, otherwise, the business can they'll be coming in here to wrestle me out. So maybe I should just keep going. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's very good to be here. This is my second ICANN meeting, and it's notably different from my first, which mostly felt like I'd fallen down a hole and joined a cult by accident without an exit door. And now I just know that that's true, so that's okay. I spent the last 6 months simply validating that initial assumption. But this has been since the last meeting. I've been focusing intently on two or three things, many things, but sort of in two or three large areas, which I hope will be helpful. So what I'll do for just a few minutes is just explain to you how we're approaching this. I'm going to make one big caveat, which is that this is all going on as we speak. So it's all in real time. New things are coming along all the time that we have to accommodate. There's quite a lot of internal changes going on in the way that we're structuring the team ICANN on the staff side. So there's a bit of building the plane and flying the plane at the same time. So that's one caveat. The other thing I wanted to just mention, which is not a caveat, but a kind of a advertisement, promotion, is my team and the PPC, which is our board committee that oversees our activity or partners with us in our activity, are co-hosting an open meeting on Thursday morning between 11 and 12:30, and I'm going to remember where the room is in a second. It's the big one. It's the auditorium, where we had the opening ceremony, I think. And we will, for any of you in this room who are either part of the community outreach group already, you probably know about this meeting and you've been on the mailing list. For anybody that's not part of it but is interested in community outreach, we will do three things in that 90-minute session. The first thing we will do is I will give a very brief overview, so perhaps if you're in this meeting, you can not turn up to that bit. I've asked all my colleagues, even ones that don't work in my team, to be part of this group. So people but who are very involved in engagement, because they get asked to do things like Jeff Moss on the security side. We do a lot of DNSSEC training for the community, for example. The digital guys will be there. David Olive will be there. There's a very high level of crossover between what David's team does, not in terms of making policy, but in terms of engaging with SOAC structures and what my team need to do. And I've also asked Xavier, our CFO, and David and Xavier will address the group very briefly, literally, no slides, just a very brief address after me, just in David's case to give an overview of how this all fits together as we're doing things at the moment, so the external relationships, if you like, and inside the community. And Xavier, I've asked to give an overview of where we're at in the budget process. Most of the issues that come up, or many of the issues that come up to staff from the community on outreach issues, are about budgets. So not necessarily the budget process itself, but what we should do, what we should pay for it, how many travellers go to this, do we do this website, do we do this piece of collateral. And then we'll go into four facilitated groups. So if you come to the session, if you have a strong preference, I'll tell you what those groups are now. If you don't have a strong preference, Janice will give you a number at the door, 1, 2, 3, 4, and be part of that group. And we will facilitate a half-hour discussion with the goal of identifying the most important thing, so cross community groups, the most important thing that this group feels we should focus on in this particular area, in order that we can take out of that meeting 8 really key initiatives that we, so the most important thing and the nice to have. So that's I would say there's eight key initiatives that we can really work on together, and that maybe some done by staff, maybe none done by staff, some done by the community, and we'll have a wrap-up discussion about next steps. And this is very much carrying on from the work that Kurt did with the original community outreach group. So the four groups that we will, which we did in debate, and some of you were on a call that we had to discuss this, for which was very helpful. One on, I would say, things that you write, so collateral, websites, newsletters, PowerPoint decks, all those kinds of things. One on things that you go to, so events, training like DNSSEC, workshops, speaker groups, panels, and things we're invited to, events this side. The third will be digital tools, digital platforms. So everything from really how we're engaging when we're working online, giving you a bit of insight into how we're planning to change that, and I'll give you some of that in a second, or to expand it, to complement what we have already, not to change what we have, but to complement it. And then finally, some of you will have been involved in the creation, which precedes me, my arrival, of a measurement model, which was referred to by some people colloquially as the waffle iron model, which was turned out to be very confusing on the call because I thought everyone knew what this was and it turned out that they didn't. But it's a very simple kind of adoption model for measuring participation, engagement, as we recruit or grow new members in the different parts of the community and the different parts of the world. So that model is a super model, but it hasn't got any data in it. It stopped before that happened. So we'll have one group looking at how are we going to populate that data? What should we do? What's the right... Lots of different ways we could do it. So we'll run a discussion on, you know, what's the view of this collected group as to what we should do. At the end of that 30 minutes, we'll ask each group facilitator to share the number one and number two from each group so the whole room can hear. We'll have remote dial-in. We can't put Adobe into each of the work groups, but we'll do it on... We can, but we can only do it on chat. And we'll then, but the whole session will be handled remotely. So that sounds rather laboured, but I think it's important that you know that we're doing that. Now, the reason we're doing it primarily is to get a better rhythm and a better understanding between what the staff are doing and what the community are doing. Not so that we all do the same things or that we all get in each other's way, but at a high level, we're more joined up, we're more sharing understanding of what we think is important, what gets resourced properly, whether that's by people or by dollars. It doesn't mean we won't do other things, by the way, apart from the eight, but it's a prioritisation exercise and trying to do that in a collaborative way so that everybody feels they've had their say. Wendy.
Thanks, Wendy Seltzer. And I guess I have a question. It sounds like an interesting exercise. I wonder about using it as a prioritization when it's sort of those who show up are involved, and how do you play that against the other ways that the community balances stakeholders and tries to ensure that it's hearing from all of the different parts in developing priorities?
No, that's a great point. Well, the two things I'd say to that, three. Firstly, I think we need to discuss that as we go along, for sure. I don't think we should view this as an absolute or a kind of final view. And we there's no reason, to my mind, why the result of this discussion shouldn't be published. I don't know that I put it out for public comment. You know, it's implementation, not policy, for sure. But certainly there's no reason why we shouldn't share that on a blog and make sure that the community is aware of it and can come in and comment and have a view. So, I mean, that to me is absolutely fine and very sensible. Secondly, we'll make sure we will have remote participation in the room. So, and we have done our very best to promote this session to the best of our ability. So we really hope that anybody who really is interested is either here in person or on the phones. And we have, again, to the best of our ability, and it's not perfect, tried to make it in a non-conflicted slot. Not perfect, but it's the best that we could do. The final thing I'd say is that many of the ideas have come from the work that had already been done by this group with Kurt. Most of this is not new, but what had happened was that it had stalled. So when it was also in a different sort of a different staff bit of ICANN, without wishing to sound too sort of non-technical about it, So once it became obvious to me that this work, which I had not previously been aware of, to be frank, once it became obvious to me that this great work had been had taken place and I'd reviewed it with Wendy and Janice, I kind of immediately said, well, guys, you know, I mean, it's obvious to me that we need to join these two things together as quickly as we can. And the first opportunity to do that is here at Beijing. So hopefully we can. And I don't see. And if this model works, it's an if. We've never done it like this before. It is an experiment. It might be chaos. I hope it isn't. Then I think I would love to run one, you know, something similar every session, every meeting. And there's no reason why this community outreach group shouldn't become more engaged on an ongoing basis if people want it. So that's. I hope that's helpful.
Okay, could we maybe get a queue going? Klaus? Anyone else? Alan? Okay. And who's that? Joy? Okay.
Sally, first of all, it's an absolute pleasure to be able finally to talk to you. And I apologize in advance that what I'm saying might be a little bit on the long side, but I try to keep it inside 3 minutes. First of all, I think we've got a fundamentally different understanding of the word outreach or the direction where outreach should go. I think a large number of the non-commercial stakeholder group is seeing what you just described more or less as inreach. It's strengthening existing people who are engaged or stakeholders of ICANN. I think what is for us a very high priority, because it is essential and the basis of the multi-stakeholder model, is that we need to start outreaching to the general public. And that is something where I think our emphasis, and for example the emphasis of NPOC, and I think also the NCOC is going in the same direction, will be in the near future or happening. I'll give you two examples from NPOC. One is an initiative we started called iInform, where we're trying basically to get all the stakeholders who are having an interest in informing the general public about internet governance together, and to bring all the different forces together and the different strengths together, and establish some programs, because the frustration also with the multi-stakeholder model is, and the danger with the multi-stakeholder model is, that internet governance is a country where 1% of the people rule for 99% of the people, and 98% of the 99% don't even know that the 1% exist. That's a point. And for example, one of the outcomes of this iInform, hopefully as concrete as possible, is for example to get something like a six-part series on internet governance going in the BBC World Service or in Al Jazeera. Just very quick, there is one meeting in The Hague on the 7th and 8th of May. There is a meeting about this in at the WISIS in Geneva the week afterwards, and we are also looking at a conference in later this year, a larger thing, probably in Africa. And the second thing we are talking about is, for example, the problem is, and it's all our problems, that we don't have enough GTLD registrations in developing countries. And the problem is not that there is no interest in Africa, for example, for the creation of new GTLD. Quite simply, there is no business model, no sustainability model in there. If people in Africa would know how to make it financially work, they would register. And for example, coming out of the development sector, we have these models. And for example, we're planning for in October a conference with 100 entrepreneurs from Africa, just simply to explain to them what opportunities new GTLDs in the second round will offer, and explain to them the available business models. So hopefully, and when just a few from them go into the second round, our work is done. That brings me to the last point. Thanks God, it's my last point. You don't, as staff and so on, don't need to do everything on your own. There is a lot of help, and there's a lot of initiatives where you simply can fall back on. There's not the expectation from the community, so Sally, go out and do it. There's also an expectation that you engage us in what you are doing and use the stuff we are doing for your own purposes. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all extremely helpful. And because we have a very short time here and I wanted to explain about the meeting on Thursday, what I haven't actually done is tell you what our strategy is. But you've actually hit on quite a few key points, so thank you for that. The meeting on Thursday is not an expression of our outreach strategy. The meeting on Thursday is an engagement meeting that we want to have with the community to do some very specific things that do allow us, by the way, to meet to some extent your third point. It's a first stage engagement for my whole staff team with everybody that we can drum up from the community that wants to talk about this, to make sure we're all in the same place at the same time having the same conversation. Sounds very basic, but it's actually, I think, really important, because I'm totally with you, actually, on everything you said. And I couldn't agree with you more, but making it possible for the staff and the community to work, to A, understand what's going on, inform each other, and B, help each other in the right way. I think we need to actually spend a bit of face time to get that sort of level set. And I hope we can do that on Thursday. If it goes well, what will of course happen is we go, wow, we need to do a lot more of this, which is kind of good, which is a good thing. I hope that's what will happen. Now, to your point about the overall strategy, I mean, this is a subject of a much longer discussion. But so my team is not just focusing on the existing community. I mean, it will be on Thursday, but it isn't overall. Far from it. The reason I came to ICANN was, and this sounds a bit pretentious, but was kind of to help ICANN engage with the next billion. I mean, seriously, no, I'd want to be super clear about that. The second reason I came was to try and bring some international and kind of higher profile skills and bring together communications, engagement, participation, some of the tools, and try and bring them together in a much more logical, less siloed way. So the second big initiative, you know about the internationalization piece because Fadi's talked quite extensively about it. So if you want to, if for example, your iForm initiative, which I think sounds great, definitely, if you haven't already spoken to Nigel about that, please do. And he will want to help you, and he should help you, and he should at least know it's going on. Okay? For those of you who want to engage regionally, and I know that is not everybody in this group, I do understand that it is absolutely the job of the regional vice presidents to work at a regional and even in the future, I hope, at a national level to work with the community. Like I was going to say, a mini ICANN. I do not mean that in a full sense. I mean it in an engagement sense, in a participation sense. That would be my longer-term vision. So there is a blend of staff and volunteers using our bottom-up model, extremely explicitly pushing it out across the world over time. If I could wave a magic wand tomorrow, I would do that like that. But I can't, which leaves me to my third point, which is very much in response, I hope, to what you're saying, is so how are we going to, if we want to bring new people into ICANN, how are we going to do it? Now, some of it is being practical about what we're doing already and organising it better. And that's kind of what we're touching on Thursday. It's a little bit, but it's better than nothing. But the real way we're going to do it is we are going to need to create a proper engagement strategy, which is, and this is my view, which is user-focused. I know that might not be the right word. It depends which audience you're in. Do we call it user-focused, consumer-focused, registrant-focused, individual-focused? We know what we mean, okay? Internet user-focused, which helps them go on a journey from the very, very beginning where they are the 98% who do not know that the 1% exists. I love that. I'm going to quote you on that. Because you're dead right. You're dead right. That's the big challenge. And I'm working at the moment on producing, and you'll see in one of this, if you're interested in that, come to the digital tools session on Thursday, because we're going to focus on that issue then. Looking at, and I'm getting some help from people who've put large government departments across the world online, because we've got in there issues of public participation, issues of communication and content. huge question marks about how are we going to put the right content on the platforms? How do we make those platforms work asynchronously as well as synchronously? How do we deal and knock on the head the language issue? Big strategic question. How long is it all going to take? How much is it all going to cost? What are the priorities? The goal being, think concentric circles. So we're right on the outside, we know nothing. So there's an awareness-raising issue. An explanation issue is the next line in. Why should I care? The next circle in from that is, what should I know? Okay, you've piqued my attention. What do I need to know? How do we help the user take themselves on a journey, educate themselves as they go through that journey, to the point where they might then say, how do I participate? And even then, it might not be straight to policymaking. It might be to join a group. It might be to be part of this group or these groups. That's where it comes ties together with the kind of recruitment objectives that you have. So I think being the difficult thing as ever with ICANN is trying to be very clear about what the task is that we're trying to achieve, so we don't get so lost in the weeds of execution before we've actually solved the problem that we never get to solving the problem. So that's a very kind of... But let me just say one more thing. If I did nothing else in my time at ICANN but crack that issue, that journey issue, I would feel that my work was done, because I think it is the most important thing that my team and we, this part of our lives at ICANN, that everyone wants the same thing. I know they do, right across the community, is how do we make that happen? So trying to get the right tools and processes in place which the community is engaged with and supportive of, and it's properly, there's good consultation, that's where I'm at right now. So I hope that's helpful. Sorry, Robin.
No,
but I kind of did that the wrong way around. I should have said that bit first.
Great, thanks. Okay, let me move along in the queue. We've got Elan, then Joy, then Kathy, and then Rafiq. Anyone else? And if I could ask you to please keep your remarks somewhat brief, because we don't have a whole lot of time, and Sally does have a deadline that she has to leave for another meeting. So, okay, Elan.
Thank you very much, Sally, for this presentation. We will be there. And since you last looked, we've put a pod in the oven, the waffle oven package. We did a 2013 outreach plan. So it wasn't meant to fit into the pod, but I think it pretty much fits into the pod. So that's what we did.
Thank you.
We already have a contribution, at least one.
Great. Thank you very much. Joy.
Thank you. Thanks, Sally. Really great to see the enthusiasm and energy for the work that you're doing and your office is doing. I know that the non-commercial stakeholder group have a particular interest in this, particularly as a group that advocated in the new applicant guide process having financial support for applicants from developing countries, and that being very, very actively resisted for quite a long time. And now, with the benefit of hindsight, people saying, gosh, we should have probably done more of that. So I think, we're very fully supportive of that. I think in terms of innovation, I would encourage you to think about, particularly in the regional offices that ICANN is setting up, taking some of the non-commercial people with you to those, so that the faces of the community that you're trying to encourage in reflects those who are already here and who we want more of. And also to think a bit laterally and connect more with some of the other networks, for example, Human Rights Defender networks, Internet Governance networks, where naturally there are some synergies to be made. So thank you for that.
Great. Thank you very much. Kathy.
Great. Kathy Kleiman. I wanted to tell everybody how much I love what Sally is doing. For so long, we were secret. People didn't know. So forget the second billion users. The first billion users still need to know, what we're doing. The outreach is amazing. I hope I'm not breaking any confidentiality, but I called Sally and to talk about what we do after people get interested. So you talked about the questions, what is ICANN? Mm. What is ICANN doing? And so when you get to the question, what can I do? And people, I urged her to we talked about what do you do when someone gets so interested, they say, what can I do? And it's very difficult. You don't participate directly in ICANN. You participate through stakeholder groups and constituencies. And and so we talked about that, how we begin to feed people through, and it may take a while, but into our stakeholder group to help us make policies so that we don't have three people, doing all the working groups. And so this is our future. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure, I was glad Alan spoke, because otherwise I was going to volunteer you to speak, but about the constituency's outreach efforts here. And I wasn't sure if you met Ed, who's the head of our outreach and engagement effort in the non-commercial users constituency. But I've told him to contact, that I thought you guys should spend some time together.
Definitely.
And he's got amazing ideas and amazing outreach to regions that we've barely had representation in, including from Russia. And he drafted my son to head a kids group. So there's a lot of stuff going on here, and it's all in the same direction and energy. So thank you, and
it's
hopefully
great.
We can...
It's really good.
Coordinate efforts and resources.
Well, I know I'm going to have to go in a minute, but thank you for your kind words, Kathy, and I would reciprocate. We did have a very, very good discussion, and it really helped shape my thinking. And when I went back into the group, the strategy group that I've just been describing on the digital engagement strategy, because I'll tell you what I think, she won't mind me saying this, what Kathy said to me is, I'm a bit worried that you're not going to have meetings anymore. But Kathy, I want to say this because I want you to know that it's really important that you said that to me. Because it had never occurred to me that anybody might think that we wouldn't have meetings. But it was a really great observation. And it really helped me when I was going, after we spoke, coincidentally a few days later, I had a session with the team. And I went back to them and I said, I didn't name you, but I said I'd had this conversation. And it was very thought-provoking, both in terms of what you've just described at the stage of the process, but also remembering that sitting in a, however well-intentioned, sitting in a room somewhere saying we need to solve this problem, this is the obvious way to us, and just assuming that certain things are obvious and given is very dangerous. And that was extremely helpful. So it's reciprocated. And I'm very glad to meet you, and I look forward to seeing more of you.
Thank you. And then Rafiq has the last...
The last word? Oh, that's good. Thank you, Sally, for the presentation. I think I'm going to highlight quickly what some people said, but I think the most important is really to engage those who are already involved here to participate more. And I want to highlight that when the leadership of ICANN visits some countries, to not just visit the CCTLD operator or the DNS industry or the government, but also to care about the civil society and try to meet them, even if it's really short meeting. I think you understand what I'm talking about. I was really frustrated in that time. Even I could meet you, it was quite in strange conditions. But I think if you develop some rule of conduct when you go somewhere, to avoid to go in some political, really sensitive in term of political, to try to meet everybody in more open meeting and not just those stakeholders, because can't create some, we are talking about multi-equal stakeholder. Thanks.
It's very good feedback, and we've had this discussion before, which is why we're looking knowingly at each other. One of the things that is a, I'm not really going to apologise, but I'm going to explain, and I think you will probably all see this. You know, we are moving quickly in terms of trying to get things done at ICANN, and so when Fadi in particular is moving around and doing visits, he is also learning, and we are learning as a team what the right kind of what's the right word? Not etiquette. That isn't quite the right word. But it is what you say. It's an appropriate kind of rhythm of meetings that you're having with the stakeholder groups as you go around the world. And where at all possible, that is what we will do. I would just make one point, which is occasionally we may have to fit in things at very short notice because there's a very specific reason why we're in a country to see a specific person. So it isn't actually a country visit, if that makes sense. It's like just a meeting which physically involves Fadi getting off a plane in Spain or Argentina or wherever, because that happens to be where the meeting is. So, but I am very conscious of, A, the fact that if not just Fadi, but the rest of the senior leadership team
should and want to engage right round the stakeholder group in different countries. This is part of internationalization, and the only way in which we are going to build the relationships, to back to what Joy was saying, at a country and regional level with the right community, and with individuals who are on the ground as community members, who we need to really make part of. I hate to use the word team because I know it sounds very corporate, but I can't think of another word. Part of our community, part of our engagement activities, if that feels more comfortable. Because at the end of the day, it is about individuals who are prepared to volunteer and prepared to commit. And we have to make those relationships, we have to create them, and then we have to deliver them on the ground. And you can't do that if you don't go and meet people. I mean, it's obviously true. So I would give you my commitment that I hear that, and we learned a good lesson in Japan, which, thank you. Fadi, if he was here, would say, I learned a lot from you. But it's true, we did, you know, and you know, it was an important lesson. But I would also ask you to be supportive of the fact that Fadi is now getting, not because we particularly want it, frankly, as he said, he'd like ICANN to get less interesting. But the reality is, for whatever reason, Fadi is becoming more well-known, certainly in the community, and therefore when he does go to somewhere and he gets off a plane, there is sometimes just an automatic expectation that everybody can kind of jump in, which is why we ended up having a meeting at 10 o'clock at night, or whatever it was, which is not ideal. So I want you to know that the understanding is here and the intent will always be here, but it is not everything is long enough for us to see everybody in one day. I'm going to have to go, or I'm going to get into serious trouble. I really look forward to seeing as many of you as want to on Thursday, and I really appreciate this session. You're a very important part of the community for many reasons, and I feel very, very strongly that our process of really outreach, it won't be led only by this group, but I think you're a very, very important voice, and I hope that, you know, we'll all be working together a lot more closely in developing some of these issues. And as we go, now we've done a bit more of the sort of central building of things, I think we're ready much more now to implement. So I better go.
Thank you very much, Sally. We really appreciate your coming today to speak with us. Go ahead, David.
Just before the next thing I wanted to pass on from the online chat, he wasn't able to say it at the time due to connection clear, but I just wanted to pay Mui Punjit. Wanted to say that he strongly supports anonymous registration, who is on that item, and just to let you know that he's experienced one of the very strong internet censorship countries. Anonymous who is was very important. Now that I've passed on that comment, back to you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so let's, moving on our agenda, we've got an opportunity to talk about the issues that we will be speaking with the board about today, or at least some of them. We came up with our list of topics to suggest to the board, but we haven't received the board's list of the topics they want to discuss with us yet. Usually we get that about a day or two before the meeting, but I have yet to receive that, so I don't know what the board wants to talk to us about. But we know what our issues are, and Dave's going to put those up on the projector in a moment. But the first issue is the issue of the replacement of the bottom-up multi-stakeholder policy development process with staff unilateralism. And so that was an issue we wanted to raise with the board as well when we meet with them today. So let's start there. And let me open up the queue. I know, because we've talked a lot about this week, so I don't think I need to sort of lay it out. But I want to hear what you guys have to say and what you want to say to the board on this issue. So let me get a cue going. I've got Rafiq, and then Wendy, and then Elan. Okay, and that'll get us started. Go ahead, Rafiq.
Just a question, how we will do that? We will have.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Sorry.
Please.
How we will proceed? How we will proceed? If we will have someone for each topic, or...
I think that's right. Once we talk about it in here, I think we'll get a sense for, if we don't know yet, some of these issues, who we want to sort of be our primary or our first lead discussant with the board. But, of course, everyone is welcome and encouraged to speak. But before we leave this room, we will make sure that we have at least one person who will be the primary discussant for, or the initial discussant for these topics. Okay, so...
Wendy.
Thanks, Wendy Seltzer. Let me, looking at the topics, if we are, I guess I might reframe the who is privacy as in the new directory services and maybe drop that one down because just as a thank the board for convening the new directory services discussion and open up to, we'll look forward to coming back as that starts reporting back in. Or did we put that on the agenda to sort of note our concern that there weren't more privacy experts on the panel and to reflect some suggestions that that the panel consult with outside privacy experts? I just didn't remember how.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just sort of raising this issue with the board once again, letting them know that we're still concerned, that we still want these kinds of privacy protections, and on this working group, we're concerned there isn't enough there. And okay,
so let me then suggest that we frame it as we understand that this is a new look at the domain registration data, and that it's important to get privacy considerations in at the ground floor. So we invite the group to use creative questions and outreach to the privacy experts in the community to get privacy input there. On the other subjects, I'm particularly interested in the new GTLDs and registrant rights. We understand now, I'm given to understand that the RAA is basically agreement in principle at this point. Of course, we haven't seen even the principle of the document, much less the language, and so we I've been preparing a draft registrant rights appendix to replace the really anodyne registrants' rights and responsibilities document that is currently attached there. I would love it if we were prepared to submit a letter to the board before we leave Beijing, because from the timeline I've heard, the board is going to be asked on April 20th to approve the registrar accreditation agreement. Council, I would like to have for council to say we must at least review this document, but from the non-commercial stakeholders group, it would be great, as we represent non-commercial registrants of domains, to say registrants' rights are not merely the right to know the terms of service of a registrar, but actually to have registration be persistent and stable and free of censorship at the registrar and a few other actual protections for the registrant.
Great. Thank you so much for that, Wendy. Next, I've got Elan, David, and then Joy. Anyone, and Kathy.
Okay. A short point on topic number one. It ends with the word unilateralism. I don't necessarily disagree with the descriptive, but I was wondering if we could, for the sake of opening up discussion, try something else. Board implementation, or I mean, it's probably more than
implementation. Yeah, I see your point.
You
it
see
might
what
be a
I
bit
mean.
Off-putting. Yeah. But we could talk about the expanding role of staff. That might be one way to phrase that. Circumvention. That might be the word of the week. Dictatorship. I'm not sure this is meeting Alan's concern. Okay, great. That's a very good comment. Okay, and then I've got David, and then Joy, and then Kathy.
Just wanted to if we do need someone to speak on the first point, I'm willing to do it. I think one of the points we should make very much in this one is that it is not coming just from us. We are. It's a very strong concern for us, but we've had exactly the same concerns from some of our colleagues within the GNSO. And if there need to be new... we've not been offered any... We've not been offered any explanation of why it is necessary, really. If it is for reasons of sort of urgency, we will come up with, you know, if we're asked to come up with a quick process, we'll do what we can. But what we've had so far is just, I don't think we can prevent, I don't think there's any point in presenting this one without presenting specifics. It's an ongoing issue throughout ICANN. If we present it without linking it to specific issues, it's going to be just another, you know, we'll just hear the same words again. We're listening, we're trying. No, you're not listening very hard, you're not trying very hard. We need to link it to specific things and ask for specific sort of justifications and explanations and responses.
Great, thank you. That's really helpful. Joy.
Thanks. I just wanted to offer to lead on item number four, which essentially I sort of see as a standing topic, really, standing agenda item. But the particular suggestion I had for how to some things to highlight this time were just to reflect on the Toronto event that NCUC had, and also the NPOC work since then. That the particular policy sort of things that have happened recently is that the Independent Objector has released a number of decisions around public interest objections in relation to new GTLDs. I think we should note that. I think almost all cases, the Independent Objector has decided not to, at this stage, the preliminary assessment is not to intervene on public interest grounds or objection grounds. I think it's important to say that we think, for the most part, the work that's been done there is very good. It's been excellent to see the human rights discussion and considerations the Independent Objector has been taking into account, even though in amongst ourselves as a constituency group we may arm wrestle on aspects of emphasis or in particular cases. And just ask them if they have had any response or any opportunity to consider, you know, themselves, the Independent Objectives, comments, without asking them to bind themselves or make statements around that. So just to affirm that process. So that was my suggestions, but open to discussion, of course.
That's great, and thank you so much for being willing to get us started on the human rights topic. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, so next in the queue is Kathy.
Let's see. As I look at the four topics up there and think about how busy the board is right now, I wonder exactly what we're asking the board to do. It's nice to brief them on our concerns or issues that we want them to take into account. And I heard a little bit, but to the extent that they're action items, I think that's what their tentacles are up for, is what can they do next? I wasn't sure if that had been talked about during the meeting. I wanted to see if adding another number five would be possible. I don't know if it's a closed list.
We can try.
And it has to do, and Brian's here, so he might be able to help us with this. The Registrar Accreditation Agreement is one thing, and there may be disagreements here, but that's traditionally a bilateral agreement. The Base Registry Agreement is not, and let me explain what that is. The Base Registry Agreement is the agreement that is in the applicant guidebook, that it's the model agreement by which new GTLD registries are supposed to sign on to. And we negotiated that together, guys. That was right. I mean, that was done by the community. And what's like the Registry Code of Conduct comes out of the work of the Vertical Integration Working Group. And I believe a new committee has been created to help negotiate that. Brian, maybe you can help us. And that should certainly be reviewed by the community before it gets finalized, because we're talking about the model agreement for new GTLDs. And I know there are a number of concerns. We probably share them. So I think we'd probably be supportive of where the registries are coming in on this. But I would add number five, that before the base registry agreement is finalized, it needs to come back to the GNSO. Brian, can you help? I feel like I'm talking in code here. And you talk to the world.
No, happy to, Kathy. Thank you. So speaking in my capacity as CEO of Public Interest Registry, can give you at least an update on where we are. There has been obviously some proposed contract provisions. It started out on February 5th and was characterized, rightly so, as a unilateral right to amend. It has gone through some iterations as FADI has talked to contracting parties and members of the community, not in perhaps a structured way. And where we are right now is there's been a lot of back and forth between the registrars and ICANN to work out the final details of the 2013 RAA. And on the base registry agreement in the guidebook, as you correctly note, we are still in process, and the registry stakeholder group has just decided to put together or reassemble a negotiating team for the purpose of working with ICANN staff now and in the coming days to get the final agreement on the provisions of the new base registry services agreement, which includes this, what was called a public interest amendment, is now called an extraordinary amendment. So all of these things are in process.
Okay.
You're correct. We are indeed engaged trying to hammer out the final details, whatever they're going to look like. I have, and others in the registry stakeholder group have, voiced clearly our concerns about the nature of this process. So, yes, I can affirm the points that you've made, and I'll leave you to your agenda.
Thank you. So point number five proposed.
Great. Thank you very much. And then we've got Rafiq, and then we will move to the ATRT members. Go ahead, Rafiq. You have, once again, the last word.
So I liked that Cathy highlighted that we need to ask about actions. And the last time with the board, we talked about human rights, and we mentioned GNI and even Transparency International. So I want that we ask them clearly what they, if they start something or they have a plan or a strategy. So GNI guidelines, the Global Network Initiative.
Rafiq, do you want them to have an initiative with GNI?
Yes, we talked about that last time, and Fadi said they will start to check or to do some study or something. So.
Thanks. Great. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's move on to the next issues on our agenda, and we're going to talk to members of the Accountability and Transparency Review Team who are here to talk to us about what they've been doing, what their process is, and how we can help, how we can sort of feed into them and help them try to understand to meet their goals and objectives and understand our concerns. So if I could just sort of, I don't know if you guys have a person who's sort of going to, let me first introduce who we have here. We've got Brian Cube, once again from PIR. He's a member of this team. And we've got Alan Greenberg from At Large, and he's a member of this team. And Avery Doria from NCSG, and she's a member of this team. And pardon me? Damie Getchko, and again, he's a member of this team, and Lisa Fur, and she's a member of this team as well. So, Brian, why don't you sort of get us started and just kind of walk us through what the purpose of this group is and how we can help you to carry out its mission. Thanks.
Thank you, Robin, and thank you all for having us. My name is Brian Cute. I now have my ATRT2 hat on. I am the chair of the Accountability and Transparency Review Team that is chartered under the Affirmation of Commitments. We have just begun our work. We formally commenced in February of this year. The review team process is laid out and agreed to between ICANN and the community, the international community, Department of Commerce and international community, more broadly speaking, to undertake a periodic reviews of ICANN's accountability and transparency. There have been three prior reviews that have taken place. The first Accountability and Transparency Review Team, the Security, Stability, and Resiliency Review Team, and the WHOIS Review Team. Each of those review teams made recommendations to the ICANN Board of Directors that are either implemented or in the process of implementation to some degree. The role of this team, the second Accountability and Transparency Review Team, is to review ICANN's implementation of each of those three review teams' recommendations, to make an assessment on how ICANN has effectively or not implemented those recommendations, and make recommendations of our own. We are also chartered to assess a fourth category, which is a broad assessment of ICANN's accountability and transparency, and with an eye toward the overall review process. So we have four distinct work streams. We have to deliver recommendations to the ICANN board by December 31st of this year. We are in the initial phases where we will be collecting data, and our calendar, as we've mapped it out so far, would have us putting out for public comment draft proposed recommendations at the beginning of October. So between now and the beginning of October, we will be collecting data, interacting with the community. We will have structured interactions with all of the entities, ACs, SOs, ICANN board in Durban, and we will be reaching out to you in advance of Durban, providing you some advanced questions or discussion points, and again, collecting data systematically between now and October, with the goal of making an objective, independent assessment of ICANN's implementation of those recommendations and making recommendations of our own at the end of the year. I think that's a good overview at this point in time. I'd welcome any of the ATRT2 members to please add their own thoughts at this point. Alan?
Thank you, Brian. Just for clarity, on the SSR and who is review team, our task is to review the review team and the implementations, but not to make additional recommendations on those subjects. Whereas on the ATRT, we are to review the review team and the implementation and fill in any gaps or make additions that we feel are necessary. ATRT1, for instance, focused on some of the issues in the AOC, did not put a lot of focus on others. Among the other things we've discussed, we're going to try to put at least some focus on the issues that were not fully addressed in the previous one, and of course critique the previous one and the implementation as necessary.
Avery.
Hi, Avery Doria. In this case, though one of you also speaking as a member of the ATRT, with the questionnaire that's coming out, I think one of the things that's really important is sort of a brutal honesty from the people that are looking at it in terms of where they see needs for greater accountability and transparency, what the group sees as the needs, where should the focus of the team be placed, and especially you'll see when you look at the questionnaire, it's been out, I don't know if any of you have looked at it, in several different places we say, and what questions haven't we asked that we should be asking? And what objects, what issues haven't we mentioned that should be looked into? So take that questionnaire, please, and really take putting information in that as a serious sort of command to the group of these are things that need attention, and also be sure to look at the sort of negative space, the stuff that's not there that we looking at what last year did and what the year before did and what the year before that did have gotten sort of into a shaped view that sort of says these are the things we're doing, whereas anything that's in the AOC, anything that's pertinent to accountability and transparency of ICANN is fair game for you to bring up in that form and you know, ask for something to be done about. Any issues that you've seen, any results that you've seen that look like they were very successful, say so. Any results that you've seen that look like they were less than successful, completely successful. Point that out. The questionnaire tries to be very neutral, and it looks for the good stuff as well as the less than good stuff. Because the good stuff is important to point out. If indeed something got done right, which I'm sure it did, then it's good to say, this one, you know, that's an exemplar of what is good, et cetera. So really, I beseech you as the group to take that questionnaire very seriously, because it shapes the work that will get done in a large sense.
I'd like to add a couple thoughts too to Avery's points. And first of all, Alan, Avery, and Lisa are vice chairs of the ATRT2 as well. Pardon my omission in the introduction. In addition to Avery's points, which I fully support, we did put out requests for public comment. There are a lot of questions. We asked ICANN's team to, and Alice Jansen is here with us giving us very good support, to publish that just before the Beijing meeting, knowing that that is not in keeping with good practice, and for that reason asked that that comment period be open 21 days after the Beijing meeting closes. There will be a reply comment cycle, but we recognize also that there are a lot of questions. This is a first request for input. Don't be daunted by the long list of questions. If you only want to provide answers to two of them and you have good observations and good data, please do that. And if you don't want to answer the entire thing, don't just put it to the side because you think we want the whole response. So I'd add that and then ask Lisa if you have some additional observations at this point. No? Demi? No? Okay.
Okay, we've got Wolfgang, and then does anyone else want to get in the queue on this? Go ahead, Wolfgang.
Thanks, Brian, and the others. I think the ATRT team is one of the rare committees where all stakeholders are represented, including governments, on a real equal footing. I think this is really an important thing, and so it would be interest also for the community as a whole if you develop in the process certain procedures, how the stakeholders interact. This would be very useful for the further enhancement of the multi-stakeholder model, because the multi-stakeholder model is certainly learning by doing. And what you are do, that you work together with governments, with vice ministers, and as a high leading officials, you know, this practice which will emerge in the process could be extremely useful for the further development of the multi-stakeholder model. So keep this in mind. This could be a very interesting side effect of your work, that you can say, okay, here, look, we can work together on an equal footing in our respective roles and sharing decision-making if it comes to recommendation. I think this is a unique chance, a unique opportunity for your group to produce this in the process. Thank you.
Thank you. You raised an interesting point. Now, it hadn't dawned on me, actually, that this is one of the few groups where GAC members or GAC representatives, because they're not all GAC members, actually participate in the work without fearing that they're talking on behalf of their government. It's rather interesting. One of the tasks in the AOC that was not addressed in the first ATRT, but we plan to, is how do you get the community to work together? If you have any good ideas, but you may have identified one right now, simply the ATRT itself or the other review teams are a model, but if you have any further ideas, a lot of things we've tried over the years haven't worked real well. So.
Great. Thank you very much. Joy.
Thanks. Just as a follow-up, you know, one thing that I've pondered a lot is in other forums that I'm involved in, particularly where governments are present, often governments say that they speak, you know, they represent their states and as part of that also civil society voices. And one thing that I've been pondering sort of for a while now is how to join the dots around some of the GAC role and its representational role and its advisory role in ICANN with the constituents it purports to represent, who are also here in ICANN constituencies in other capacities. for example, in this stakeholder group, or you know, or business, or others. So I'm just sort of curious and thinking out loud a little whether the ATR remit might also cover some scope for thinking about transparency mechanisms or ways to connect some of those dots across the GAC as well as sort of the ICANN tree itself. Thanks.
Thank you, Joy. So while we absolutely want to hear everything, positive, critique, negative space that's on your mind, we do have a scope. Our scope is paragraph 9.1 of the Affirmation of Commitments. So I encourage you to read that carefully. That is our scope of work. To your question, Joy, there may in fact be a couple places in 9.1 where your question is relevant. The section that relates to the effectiveness of the role of the GAC is one where that question may fit. We know already that we're likely to take a hard look at the PDP process, and that may lead to some questions about how different parts of the community interact when policy is being made. But there is a scope of our work. It's clear. It's open to some interpretation, but use that as a roadmap, if you would, in submitting. And I'd also like to add, Wolfgang, it's a great point, and it hadn't occurred to me either. And all I can say is from the first ATRT1, it really was equal footing work. There was no status of any one member or another. There was operation on consensus. It was very collegial. I can't speak for the other review teams, but I know Kathy can. I think capturing that as part of our working methodologies could be valuable indeed. So I appreciate that suggestion as well. Kathy?
Yeah, the same with the WHOIS review team, and we did have a GAC member, Peter Nettlefold from Australia, and it was incredible. It was actually a very special experience. I'm not sure it scales to all of ICANN. We still have our silos in ICANN, and that's okay, and our bridges across those silos, but the review teams are special places. And the WHOIS review team will be meeting tomorrow with ATRT to talk. Our recommendations are still fairly new, so it will be an interesting process to review something still in formation. Having now done a review team, I'd like to thank the current review team, ATRT. It's an enormous, enormous amount of work and effort and thinking and sleepless nights and long lists, and so endless lists. So thank you.
Don't scare the new members off yet, yeah. Kathy.
As another review team veteran, I'll second that.
Great. And Carlos will have the last question or comment on this topic.
Really, the last. So this is Carlos Afonso from HIV in Brazil. I would like just to very quickly second Wolfgang's comment on the ATRT. Being part of the ATRT1 for a very short period of time, I was there just for 2 months, I was really impressed to see how we could implement the multi-stakeholder philosophy in practice. And it was really a very interesting experience, and I'm very excited to see Avery and Demi and some other friends in the ATRT2, and I really would appreciate very much if you guys could do some record on the practice, on the best practice of the ATRT and other review teams, because since the affirmation of commitments is such this important moment in changing the way ICANN operates, definitely will be very helpful for the whole ICANN community if you guys put some effort in record and analyze and reflect upon the practices that you guys are doing. So just that.
Thank you, Carlos, and good to see you again. If I can add one final thought from me, every member of the ATRT by design comes from some corner of this community, and the validity of our output will depend on our ability to be objective and independent, and maybe as objective as we can be and independent. But it's an important ethos for us as we approach the work. With respect to your inputs, any thought you have is welcome. Opinion is welcome. Facts are helpful. We are trying to gather facts and assess facts. So if I can leave you with one thought, facts are helpful.
Thank you, and that's a great ending there. I think we need to remember that.
Beijing is the capital of China.
That was very helpful. Now we are meeting with the board in 3 minutes, so we have to quickly race off to the Grand Hall A. And first, let me thank the members of the ATRT for coming and speaking with us. I really, really very much appreciate it. And I will need to call this meeting to a close, and we'll see you all in a few minutes in Grand Hall A. Thank you.